Hi, George Wendt here. You're listening to Improv Nerd with Jimmy Curran.
Jimmy Curran's a nerd. Jimmy Curran's an improv nerd. Jimmy Curran's a nerd.
Oh. Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Curran, and this is another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by my award-winning improv classes here in Chicago, the Art of Slow Comedy, where I really believe the best improvisers are the best actors. We want to believe everything that comes out of your mouth, and I want to help you become the improviser that you've always wanted to be, the one that everybody wants to play with. I limit my workshops and classes to a reasonable number so you get plenty of reps and plenty of attention. You can check out my August 10th intensive. So if you're in Chicago on August 10th, I have a one-day Artist Low Comedy intensive. And you can go to my website, jimmycurran.com. That's jimmycurran.com. Now, that workshop is only limited to 14 people, and the last one sold out quickly. So go to jimmycurran.com. We're also sponsored by the good people at Hotel Lincoln. So the next time you're in Chicago, maybe you're in for an intensive, check out the official hotel of Improv Nerd. That's the Hotel Lincoln. They're not only improv friendly, they're also pet friendly. We have a great episode for you today. You know him. For 11 seasons, he was on the hit sitcom Cheers as Norm Peterson. He's also one of the super fans in Da Bears, and he started right here in Chicago at the Second City. Our guest today is none other than George Wendt. And I've got to tell you something. I'm very honored that he decided to do this show. He was coming in town to do a benefit at Second City for Gilda's house. And George Wendt is one of the reasons that I got into improv. Now, around 1984, when I started improvising, I stumbled into these classes as a lost, fucked up kid from the suburbs here in Chicago. I had no direction, didn't know what I was going to do. So I stumbled into these improv classes at a place called the Players Workshop of the Second City, who was run by this woman, Josephine Forsberg. Now, you got to remember, in the 80s, there's not that many people teaching improvisation here in Chicago. She also was George Wendt's improv teacher when he started out. And so every week when I would go to class, in the lobby was an old black and white headshot of George Wendt. And it also at that time, Cheers was starting to be a really, really big show. And I was like a total super fan. And I would call my sister when I was taking classes at Columbia College. I would call her on Thursday and make sure that the VCR was set so I would record Cheers. And I secretly wanted to be Norm Peterson. I wanted to be George Wendt. I wanted to have George Wendt's career. Because I loved the character so much, I could identify. And I even would go to a restaurant. It was a diner in Wilmette, which is a suburb out of Chicago. And I would come in the diner, and they had a horseshoe counter. And, you know, six regulars would yell when I came through the door, "Jimmy!" Just like they did Norm. I wanted what George Wendt had. I wanted to be a hit sitcom with a great character that it says a lot of funny things and that people really liked. And I'm not giving up that dream. I'm not going to give up that dream. We'll see if it happens. I think you're really going to like this episode. We talked to George about starting out here in Chicago and working with Josephine Forsberg and what he learned from her. We also talked about his journey at Second City and how it was kind of a bumpy road. He was put into a main stage company, then fired, put into a touring company, and then worked himself all the way back to main stage. We talked about Cheers and working on that show. And we talked to him, which very honestly, about how he doesn't like to improvise. So here it is, and we do improvise with him, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here it is, the George Wendt episode.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Did anybody else say that the you inspired them?
No.
Okay.
Can't really think of anyone.
Okay, great.
Lots of guys sitting at the corner of bars, you know, like they think I inspire them.
Really? What do they say?
I'm funnier than you, man.
Are you serious?
I don't know. No, I
okay.
Don't.
Do you get a lot of, like when you go into a bar, do a lot of people yell Norm and stuff like that?
Not anymore, no.
Okay. Did that ever bother you?
little bit. You know, I used to like winters, you know, because right. I could, like, walk around New York or something, you know, with, like, big hood on and, like, a, you know, like a, what do you call it, you know, scarf around my... Just because it was normal, right?
Right.
So no one would recognize me on the streets, and then I'd get in a bar, and it'd be like, you know, the hood would come off and the thing, and it'd be like, Richard the Lionhearted, our king is here! You know?
Because everyone could identify, like, I could identify with that character. And I remember there was a restaurant, because I grew up on the North Shore, it was called Marie's. And I would come in, and everybody would yell, Jimmy, just like Norm, you know? And I felt like I had made it, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
so I think we all could identify with that character, you know? So we'll get to Cheers, but let's start with Second City.
Okay.
Is there any, do you want to go, do you want to start somewhere else?
No.
Okay. I'm just...
We can start with Players Workshop.
Let's start with
Second City.
Okay, let's start with Players Workshop. So
well,
tell us.
There was a man, Jack Mongan, who inspired me. Yeah, there's a guy here from Josephine's Workshop.
Okay, so you after Notre Dame, which you got...
Right.
Okay, you failed out of Notre Dame. You got a 0.0. Now, the people...
Hang on. I got a 0.00, but that was not my cum. Okay.
Okay. All right.
I was rocking a solid 2.0.
Okay. Then what happened?
That was just first semester junior year. I got the 0.00.
What happened to that?
Freshman year, I lived in Breen Phillips. Sophomore year, I lived in Pangborn. Junior year, I lived off campus. And I didn't have a car. I didn't think it through.
Okay.
You know, I didn't know how I was going to get to class, so I didn't.
Okay. So for those listening to the podcast, if you want to do 0.0...
Don't take any classes, don't go to any final exams, and...
Have a car, either.
Don't have a car, right.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there was a old Second City scene with Joe Flaherty and, gosh, I think it was Harold Ramis or somebody, where Billy came home and what happened? And, this is kind of how it went down with my dad. What happened? You know, his alma mater. I flunked out of his alma mater. Passive aggressive, right? I said, well, there was this party, and then everybody went to Denver. And it's true. And the two guys, mind you, 18 hours in a frickin' Triumph little sports car, me in the boot, you know, in the back. The two guys who I went to Denver with, one's an ear, nose, and throat surgeon, the other's a brain surgeon. They did not get kicked out, apparently.
So, but you end up graduating from Rockhurst.
Yeah, graduated. I went to Rockhurst College for the last year and a half or so. And then I just sort of, you know, had no, just a real late bloomer, had no idea what I wanted to do with my life.
Didn't even think about being an actor.
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
No, I'm from the South Side. You kidding? I mean,
What parish, George? Because that's what they say on
Christ
the South Side.
King.
All right, Christ the King. Yeah.
Well, first I was in Ethel Rita's until third grade, and then we moved to Christ the King.
Because my brother's over at St. John Fisher, you know?
St. John Fisher?
Yeah,
oh, God.
There.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah. They still talk like that up there.
They do.
You know? But and also in Beverly, where you grew up on the South Side, it's not about what street you live on. It's what parish?
Yeah.
Still.
And I was sort of the pioneer at Second City, because after me, the floodgates opened with Pete Burns and Mike Haggerty and...
Tim O'Malley.
Tim O'Malley, Josh Funk.
Right. All Southsiders.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that had to be a big leap for you to...
It was.
To the North Side, right?
It was. I didn't tell any of my friends, I didn't tell any of my family or any of my friends that I was taking workshops, because I was afraid I would be ridiculed. You know, and like after I flamed out after a few months, it'd be like, what happened? I thought you were Mr. Second City. And, you know, so I just shut up. And eventually I got cast in the children's show with Mr. Jack Mongan. And Josephine, you know, I've been in the workshop for a few months.
Josephine Forsberg.
Josephine Forsberg says, I think you might be ready for the kids show. Wow. All right, cool. And so she says, yeah, why don't you show up around 11:30 Sunday morning? I'm like, great, okay, 11:30. Isn't the show at 2:30? And she's like, yeah, yeah, just come at 11:30. And so I'm ringing the doorbell at 11:30, and eventually I get buzzed in, and I go upstairs, and she hands me a broom and a dustpan. And I'm like, she goes, welcome to the theater, kid. And because I had to, the night porter, Tony, the broom, he didn't show up till way later before the show. Because back then you'd smoke in the room, and, you know, cigarette butts everywhere, dirty ashtrays and cocktail glasses everywhere. I had to clean up the room for the little kids. So that was my introduction to show.
But eventually you did get into the children's.
I got into children's.
And did you play a peacock? Because there was always a story when I was taking classes, like, you know, Josephine, who by then was a little like, George Wendt, I was
Danny the Dolphin.
You were Danny the Dolphin.
Yes. Perry the Peacock.
Is here. Yeah. Okay. And what was it like back then? So you graduated from Rockers and you got into Players Workshop. How did you find Players Workshop?
Right. Well, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And my friend said, well, if that's the case, what you do is you go to Europe. And I was like, okay. And so I did. I went, got a job working construction through a friend of mine.
In Europe and, or here?
No, here.
Okay.
And then I saved up about $1,000, living at home, you know, and thanks mom and dad. And got a backpack and a, you know, round trip ticket on Icelandic, $165 from New York to Luxembourg. And, bought a backpack and off I went. And none of this $5 a day crap. It was more like 35 cents a day. I mean, I was living on the side of the road, you know, eating lemons we picked off trees and hashish and, you know. I ran into some friends I knew from Notre Dame. I ran into them in Rome. And they said, what are you doing? I said, damn if I know. And they go, well, we're going to Morocco the slow way. And so
was that donkeys or?
No. Well, they had a Volkswagen van because they had worked for a few years and saved up properly.
They were a little better off than you.
So the slow way was went something like this. We'd go, first we picked up a sailor who just got out of Vietnam. We met him at American Express in Rome and to help with gas money. And we drive about 5 kilometers, you know, and see a town. First town we come to up the coast of Italy and then around France and then around Spain, Costa Brava, Costa del Sol, then down into Morocco. But we go to the first town, little hamlet, and we'd stop and get some coffee and... Because, mind you, we'd slept on the side of the road the night before, and we'd get some coffee in a week-old International Herald Tribune, and we'd sit there, and some local kids would start playing foosball, and so we'd start playing foosball, and they'd kick our ass, and then they'd find out we were from Chicago, and they'd run and get some guy who lived down there, Mario, hey, Mario, they're from Chicago. And Mario would come down with his cane. Yeah, I waited tables at Il Vicinato at 24th and Oakley. And next thing you know, it'd turn into beers, and we'd get hammered. We'd drive to the first patch of woods outside of town. The next day, the cycle would continue. So, you know. After a few weeks, we made our way to Morocco, and there it was really warm, which is good for when you're sleeping outside. So we stayed in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia.
And how did that lead you to improv classes?
Well, I was just sort of, after a couple of years of that lifestyle, I said, I got to figure out something to do. But I knew I didn't want to do something I hated. So I said, what wouldn't I hate? And I literally used the process of elimination. Like, teaching, no, I'd hate that. Sales, I'd hate that. Doctor, that's out of the question. You know, fireman, no, I'd hate that. Cop, I'd hate that. I remember going to see Second City when I was in college. And it looked for all the world like, you know, 5 or 6 or 7, you know, young men and women goofing off on stage. And I was pretty sure they got paid. So I thought, boy, you know, if I did that, I bet I wouldn't hate that. And that's how clueless I was. I mean, the thought of a career in entertainment, you know, let alone being on a hit sitcom, you know, would have been way too daunting. So I just had this one goal of wanting to be in Second City. Had I known how hard that was, I would have plotzed. But Josephine was such a, she knew, you know, that a lot of these people were really green, you know, like me. I was absolutely green. And I would say probably about, back then, you know, no one was as professionally prepared going to Second City for workshops. I called the box office and inquired about workshops, and they sent me a flyer. It was 13 weeks, $85, I think, for 13 workshops. So she gave a lot of positive feedback. I mean, look, to be honest, about half the people in a class, let's say there's a class of 20, about half of them were sent there on the recommendation of their therapist. You should take an improv class. Work out some of your issues. Role playing. I mean, there were some nutcases. But Josephine was very nurturing. Now, had I gone in and gotten spanked by Del Close, I would have run for the hills. I've never been heard from again.
We were talking about Del backstage, yeah. And I had him as a teacher, and you had him as a director. Yeah. And my experience of Del was, I got a lot out of him, but he scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Because you would see him, and he would be mean. Mean to people on stage, and you're like, oh my God, you know, I have to go up and do the scene next and be vulnerable. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What was your experience? You're a director.
Yeah. Yeah. He was. And
were you scared of him like I was?
Well, it was a little different relationship, you know, because, you know, I was already in the company and everything. But, you know, he had great ideas and, you know, a lot of brilliant things to share. But he tended to self-destruct in the middle of putting a show together. I think it was largely because he... apart from his legendary substance abuse, it was probably had to do with... he's more interested in process than product.
And Bernie was product-oriented.
Yeah, well, in a way...
Bernie Salins.
Yeah, in a way, Bernie was the left brain and Del was the right brain of the operation.
And then, going back to Josephine and taking those workshops, there was somebody in one of those workshops that helps you out later in your career.
Yeah, well... Yeah, see, they always say, you know, always be nice to the people on your way up or whatever.
The way up because they're the same people going on the way down,
something,
right?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know what, yeah. Anyway.
I haven't gotten up there, so I gotta wait to come down.
Look, you want to be nice anyway. I mean,
well, you are incredibly
Jesus
nice.
Said so, and so right. Did E.T. for right. fuck's sake, right? Same person, by the way.
Can we just hold that for just a second? Yeah. Because I find you to be incredibly gracious, okay. Not only with
thanks
your time doing this show, agreeing to do press and stuff like that, giving me some nice advice when we were exchanging emails. You're like, stop with the low self-esteem stuff. Do you remember saying that?
Yeah.
Where did you get that, like, kind of kindness? Was it from your parents? Was it Catholicism? Was it working at Second City? Was it something...
Yeah, I would say my mother, I would say.
Really?
Sure.
What you say that so like, you know, can you elaborate on
no,
that?
No, let's get off this subject.
Okay. Does it make you uncomfortable to say that you're a nice person?
Kind of.
Okay. Well, you are a nice person.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're not going to go there. We know that.
You remind me of... you're getting back to Del, you know, like the legendary story, Jim Belushi, like Del was being fired yet again for some reason. And Jim Belushi was in, the, you know, overheard the conversation with Joyce and Bernie. Del, I don't know what's happening, but I want you to know, I trust you, Del. I love you, Del. I trust you. And Del said, oh, yeah, you trust me, huh? And Jim, yeah, of course. Boom, he kicked him right in the nuts. left Belushi crumpled in a heap and walked away.
So getting back to...
Being nice?
No, we're not going to go there because you don't want to go there.
Okay, all right.
Okay, right?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Just so you know, for the record, you're a nice...
Thank you.
Found you to be very nice.
Thank you.
You're in class with somebody who helps you later in your career.
Well, no, Jimmy and I were talking backstage, and he said, you know, it's tough nowadays for, you know, Cheers came up pretty much right on the heels of leaving Chicago, and, you know, it's harder these days to get, score a gig, let alone an agent or something. But in my workshop, my best friend in the workshop, and I don't know if he was in yours, Jack, but Brandon Tartikoff.
So for people who don't know Brandon Tartikoff.
He was a legendary head of NBC, and then he went on to be the head of Paramount Pictures before he died, tragically young. But it was funny because they used to have this showcase. I hate to keep referring to Jack, but Jack was in it. I was way too green. Brandon and I were too green to be involved in the Players O. Josephine's students' work showcase.
So you were in the workshop, and then they would have a student showcase?
Yeah, on Saturday nights at this Unitarian church in Old Town.
Old Town Church.
Yeah, and so we were too green to be involved, but we wanted to somehow be involved. So I would set up like chairs and stuff, and Brandon would sell coffees and cookies.
So you went from sweeping to setting up chairs.
Yeah, from what?
Sweeping.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
To setting up
yeah.
chairs.
And I remember one day after the show, I'm breaking down the chairs and Brandon's breaking down the coffee and cookies. And he said, one of these days, George, it's going to be me and you up there. And turned out to be true, but not until Cheers.
And how did you get the job of Cheers? Because this is an amazing thing. You left, we'll go back to Second City, but you left Second City in 80. Mm-hmm. You were out in L.A. for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, you get Cheers, mm-hmm. which for a lot of people, that is a phenomenal story. Because I have friends, and you know people, it takes years just to get a theatrical agent. Why do you think, or how do you think it happened so fast? Was the for you? And
really, timing and luck and everything. Brandon offered me a development deal to be to develop a sitcom at NBC, and
Cheers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and my agent insisted that I pass on it because mm-hmm. it would tie me up to NBC, and I wouldn't be available for other stuff. So I passed, and then Bernie calls me and says, "I've got the project for you, and you and Tim and Mary and
Mary and Gross and Tim Kazurinsky."
Yeah. So I wound up writing on the project that I had passed on. Uh-huh. For NBC, yeah, and then it was, but anyways, Brandon was, pushing me towards, look, the Cheers thing worked out, I did a Taxi, an episode of Taxi.
Where you played an exterminator.
Yeah, I went in to kill Louis Cockroach, and.
And it was at, the top of the episode, it was just a couple minutes,
yeah,
as I remember.
Yeah, and then only about 6 months ago, I found out that based on that, Glenn Charles and Les Charles and Jim Burrows had me in mind when they wrote Norm. And I only learned this 6 months ago. I was doing a panel, with them. They were doing this panel, and I was to be a guest surprise. So I'm standing in the wing, and about halfway through, they said, "Did you," Q&A with the audience, and they said, "Did you have anyone in mind for casting?" And they said, "Oh, God, it took us months and months and months for Ted Danson and Shelley Long, but Rhea, yeah, we had Rhea in mind, and George." And I'm like, "What the fuck? Now I learned this."
If you would have known that, how would that have been different for you?
I don't know. Right? I'm kind of glad I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then were you a regular originally?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I wasn't available when they shot the pilot. I was on another show, so I wasn't available.
And you were honoring that agreement, weren't you? Yeah. The other show?
Yeah, I had to. They were both Paramount shows.
Okay.
They knew.
Right.
It wasn't fooling anybody. And then, but what happened was the show I was tied up to, to didn't get picked up. So you know, Cheers came through.
And a lot of people don't remember this, but Cheers the first year, critically great show, but ratings it wasn't that great.
We were last place.
And you know, you had been on a couple series and had some, you know, been on some pilots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What were you feeling about the show? Because you had to know it was a great show, right?
Yeah. I knew it was really good. I was, you know, we were all just hoping and wishing and praying that it would get picked up, and it, you know, we were lucky once again. You know, Brandon and Grant Tinker, they kept it on the air.
What did you learn from Second City? You know, like today, when I work with a lot of students, like when you started Second City, it was an acting job. Mm-hmm. And I think now improvisers act less.
Hmm.
What is it that you learned from Second City that you could apply to doing a sitcom for 11 years?
Respect for the audience is probably primary. And Well, equally, I would say having fun.
Did you have fun on Cheers?
The shit-eating grin, you couldn't get it off my face. And you know, Josephine taught me that too. Right in the middle of a scene we were doing, you know, a exercise or something, she was coaching from the house. She goes, "When you're having fun, we're having fun." And that was the truest note I ever got.
What is one of, like, the biggest memories from doing Cheers? Like, the one that sticks out in your mind?
Probably the last show, I guess. And stuff like that.
Yeah. On that show, can I talk about some Cheers rumors? Is that okay?
Okay, sure.
Shelley Long was known as kind of a pain in the ass to work with. I don't know if you're aware of it. And if you don't want to go here, I totally respect it.
You know what? It's not entirely true. I mean, she just had a process that was not quite as intuitive as a lot of the entire rest of the cast. And certainly, you know, her process was got her to, you know, an amazing performance. And it was never about being a bitch or anything like that. It was just about, you know, she'd like to ask a lot of questions and stuff. But that's kind of, you know, for a Second City person, you know, it's not really.
Because she was at Second City.
Yeah.
And my question is, like, did you ever want to pull her to the side and go, this is about ensemble here?
Oh, she was okay with the ensemble, but it was just, it was really more between her and the writers.
Okay.
You know, right? Yeah.
Also, like, how, I mean, I look envious when I was, like I said at the beginning, when I was going in the 80s, starting out, like, I wanted to be you. I wanted that part. I mean, you achieved everything. You know, it's just such a great part.
Yeah.
And how did you enjoy it? You know, because here you are, 34, when you're starting this show, a lot of fame very quickly in a couple of years. I would imagine a lot more money than you'd ever made before on a great classic sitcom. How do you enjoy it? Was it smooth sailing or was there an adjustment period?
No, I mean, it was, you know, when the writing is that good, it's smooth sailing.
Right.
Because, you know, every day was like Christmas morning.
Mm-hmm.
You got to just open up your script and go, oh my God, that awesome joke I had has been cut, but it's even better today.
Right. But in terms of the recognition part and taking all that in.
Yeah, that's an adjustment, you know. I don't know.
I mean, because it's interesting. It's like it's everything all we always want as actors, right?
Yeah.
And then you get it, and then it's like, what is it when you get it?
Well, you know, it's weird. It's very weird to to be so, you know, instantly recognized. I could get recognized from behind. And that's not a fat ass joke. It's like the back of my head, you know, over my shoulder onto Ted, this bit here, you know, it's like, you know, people could recognize me from behind, mm-hmm. like in a car going 70 miles an hour down the toll road, you know, hey, Norm, witch! Yeah.
What's the perk about being recognized?
Well, if you, you know, show up backstage at the Rolling Stones and don't have any credentials or something.
Right.
You know, then the perk. Oh, I had a really good one. I was shooting a movie in Moscow, and it was before the collapse of the East Bloc, and so it was, you know. And there was this play. I went to see a play, well, Walk in the Woods. Mm-hmm. And then there was this reception at the United States ambassador's home, not the embassy, at his home. And so everyone was going in this bus because they were with a group, and I just had a car for the night, so I took this car, and I beat everybody there for like by a half hour or so. And there's a couple of Marines standing sentry at the thing, and they just fell over. Great. And I was like, yeah, I just waltz right in, start scooping caviar.
Are you ready to improvise now?
Oi!
No. What's the oi about?
I never liked improvising.
Okay.
It was always painful.
Okay.
You know what I liked was Josephine's way.
Okay, which so was?
Less thinking, the better.
Okay, great.
You know, because when I would stand there and look at those suggestions, that old way of Second City, I was such a dullard. I just stare at them and just absolutely nothing ever. You know, Nancy Kelly would like come up with an idea and pull me into a scene, and then, you know, I'd have something to do.
Were you scared a lot of the times at Second City?
Yeah, yeah. Of the improv.
Right.
The show was a breeze. The show was fun.
Once it was scripted, you were comfortable with it.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, so let's do, so less thinking.
Okay.
Okay, so what's going
to
help?
You have to get up.
You don't have to get up, George. George, you can sit there. I will, whatever you want to do.
All right, we're two geezers at a, sitting there.
Okay, do you want to take a suggestion?
Sure, whatever
okay,
you want.
Okay, great. Can we get a, do we want, would you like a relationship?
I don't know.
Okay, what's going to be?
I'm a Libra, I can't decide.
Okay, what's going to, what are you going to be most comfortable with? Do you want to take a relationship or a location?
Getting it over with is going to be most comfortable. So just,
did you get through Second City if you hated it so much?
I told you, Nancy Kelly would rope me into scenes, otherwise I would have been.
Now, there's also, you got fired from Second City, right?
Yeah, for sucking. For sucking.
Can you
out
tell
loud.
Us about that?
Yeah, I was heartbroken. You know, because it was smooth sailing. You know, Josephine.
You had gone from the workshops.
The children's show, and then I. Oh God, did I get lucky? Oh my God, talk about luck. I auditioned for the touring company after about a year in the workshops, and bad luck. The night before, I went to a Sox game with some friends. And we thought we'd park over by, you know, in this neighborhood at 33rd and Parnell or something. And then we'd wait in this bar, local bar, till traffic died down afterwards. And we got jumped in the bar, like mean streets, like guys pool cues over there.
They came into the bar? And
no, they were there. And we were like, you know, whatever. They didn't like the cut of our jib. So I had a shiner and a split lip and, you know, five characters through the door. Like, they all have a shiner. And a hangover. And,
right.
So I did not, I didn't get that one. But then, here's the good luck. Joyce had booked the
Joyce Sloan.
Joyce Sloan booked the touring company, you know, five or six or seven of them, into a club in Cleveland called Pickle Bill's, and the local promoter there convinced them to stay and be the resident company in Cleveland. So she had to replace an entire touring company. you know, in one day. So I got called back in again and got it that time.
And then you did touring company, and then you get main stage, and then you get fired?
Did main stage for a year, and then I got fired, and they said I was playing it safe. And I think, you know, I totally agree. I just needed more maturity, you know what I mean? More, I don't know, I didn't have a comic voice of my own. I was just sort of a goofy, funny guy, you know, who didn't really, you know, I wasn't focused enough or mature enough. And so, oh, and then they said, we don't want you to split. Like, you know, we want you to go back in the touring company. But the touring company was really starting to get a lot of work. And that's actually cool, because that's where I met my wife, because I got demoted back in the touring company, and we had this gig for the summer at Ravinia. The Chicago Symphony would play at Ravinia, and then in the Murray Theater, for people who wanted to avoid the traffic, you know, we would do Second City, like an hour of Second City sketches in the theater afterwards. Or as we like to say, the Chicago Symphony opened for us. But that's where Bernadette and I met and fell in love in the summer of 76. And we just had our 36th wedding anniversary last week.
Now, when I was starting out, they would say, don't date people in the cast.
Yeah.
How did you get around it?
Fuck all else to date. I mean, who, right. You know, with our hours, you know, there was no...
Right.
There was, you know... well, first of all, you know, Second City women are, like, so, you know, usually they're really, really cute and really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. And really, really funny.
Right.
So it's like, oh, we're all just gobsmacked.
Mm-hmm.
So that was.
Did you ever get any shit for dating someone in the cast?
No.
Okay.
There was a little, you know, there were some arguments about, you know, who would sit where in the van and stuff like that. And then Joyce, you know, boy. In the touring company, you know, there'd be some funky housing arrangements. But she let us room together after a while. But, I mean, there would be times when, God, I think we were playing down at Southern Illinois or something. And I remember Joyce goes, here's your, and I look and it's, you know, Dawes Hall, room 612, okay. So, like, you know, now we're at the show. Then we're partying after the show. Then I'm like looking around for, you know, it's like 3 in the morning and I'm... And some kid, like, you know, in tidy whities. And like, yeah, I think I'm your roommate tonight. Oh, yeah, it's right over here. You know, like this.
So you had a room with some guy that...
Yeah.
No wonder people sometimes have resentments towards Second City and feel like they weren't treated well.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, did you get back to main stage from the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how did that happen?
Well,
Because that doesn't happen. I mean, once you got fired from Second City, main stage, that was it.
Well, yeah, I suppose. I quit. You know, I had to... I think that's it. When they can't have you, then they have to have you also.
Right.
So I got married in 78, July 78, but just before we got married, I gave notice because I was getting a lot of commercials and stuff. And
here in town,
yeah,
in Chicago.
Here in town, yeah. And I figured it was time, and so I quit, and Bernie and Joyce came to my wedding, and, you know, it was all fun and everything, and we got back from our honeymoon. And Jim Belushi had got some pilot or something in L.A., and so he quit. So then they brought me back.
And how was it different this time than
Why
the first
time. Why did you do Belushi's fucking scenes? Which I'm still, like, you know, bone chips in both elbows.
Why, because he was really physical?
Arthritis in my back. Yeah, okay. Flopping all over the stage.
But how was it different for you now? Had you found your comedic voice?
Such as it is.
What would you say your comedic voice is?
Verbalized this, so okay. I would be fishing, but I'd say nice but surprisingly bitchy.
Would you say that's true for Norm Peterson?
No, he was just kind of nice.
I'm curious about this, and if is this making you uncomfortable?
No.
Okay.
No, I just
nice, but surprisingly bitchy. Mm. Can you explain that a little?
Well, you know, I do have a satirical streak in me. You know, there mm-hmm. is there's a bit of rage in way down. You know, Catholic, you know, prep school, nuns, all that. All that. And then, you know, I'm sitting on the left side politically, and, you know, a lot of the, you know, nonsense, political nonsense gets me going.
I never knew that. What pisses you off politically right now?
Well, you know, you can just strip away the barriers, or not the barriers, strip away all the rubbish, and it comes down to separation of church and state, I think.
Mm-hmm. You think that the government has gone...
Well, I think it. If I could foresee a civil war in the future, it would be those who would advocate a theocracy versus those who would advocate a secular state.
Okay, I think we're ready to improvise. Okay, let's take a location.
I must warm up.
Pardon?
Confessional booth.
A what?
Confessional booth.
A confessional booth, okay?
It's me, Jordan. Am I bothering you?
No, I'm just hearing confessions.
You seem disinterested.
No, I mean, shall I take your confession, or just want to visit? We could run down to the corner of Starbucks or something afterwards. I'll be done in like 20 minutes.
Is that okay to do that?
To
go to Starbucks?
Yeah. Why not?
Well, Sister Mary said that Starbucks is it's a sin to drink Starbucks.
Oh. But they seem to have like fair trade practices. That's what they're always on about fair trade.
That's what I told her.
Yeah.
And then she hit me with an eraser. I brought it in here for evidence.
What? Did she throw it at you?
Yes, she did, Father.
Wow. Well, you know, it could have been worse.
It could have been worse than getting hit with an eraser? What could have been worse?
Well, they used to have these leather straps.
You're kidding me.
No. Jordan. So much to teach you. But, okay, so are we here to visit, or are we here to have a confession? Because I'm open either way.
Well, could we start with a visit and maybe find out if I've done anything that needs...
I sense that you're holding something back. What did you do to get thrown an eraser thrown at you?
Well, Sister Mary is very conservative politically, and I disagree with what she had to say. She thinks that church and state should merge together as one, and I think they should be separate.
Well, I think our founding fathers would agree with you. You're not pandering to an old lefty priest, are
no,
you?
No, I'm not.
Just want to get that straight. Okay.
I'm not, Father.
Okay.
And then she said this, and I don't know if it's okay to say.
Well, try me. I've heard it all.
She called Obama the Antichrist. I just thought you should know.
Well, I don't feel like those are sins, Jordan. But I'll absolve you anyway, if that'll make you feel better.
But what about Sister Mary? What are you going to do with her?
Oh. You're right. That wasn't you. That was her. You know, I think she needs me to have a little conversation with her, and perhaps, you know, Sister Madleva, the principal, maybe we can all have a conversation and try to leave politics out of the classroom, I think is a good idea.
That's what I said to her, to leave politics out of the classroom, and that's when she threw the eraser at me.
Okay, well, I'm just going to go ahead and absolve you for that.
Okay.
And we'll meet you for a cup of coffee. That is not... are you old enough to drink coffee? Do you even like coffee?
No, I don't like coffee.
I didn't think so. Okay. All right, well, then we'll have some cocoa.
Oh, I love cocoa.
Cocoa. Yeah. It's fair trade cocoa.
Yeah, it's got to be fair trade cocoa.
Yeah. Okay.
Would you be my... My father is an alcoholic. He doesn't come home at night. And confirmation's coming up. And I need a confirmation sponsor.
Right. Would you like me to be your sponsor?
Yeah.
I'd be proud to be your sponsor. What's the date on this?
Father, it's in 2 weeks. Okay. You're saying the Mass.
Right. Okay. And the bishop is actually making the confirmation, though, I believe.
Yes, he is. But you're going to be up on the altar with him.
Yeah.
It's 11 o'clock. Okay. It's not too early for you.
No.
Because you didn't make it to the 8 a.m. Mass last Sunday.
I'm very sorry about that.
That's all right. I heard you had the flu.
I did.
Again.
Yeah, I'm I was a sickly child.
Yeah. They told us to be very quiet because you had a migraine headache that morning.
Yeah, that'll happen. All right, look.
You're going to show up for my confirmation.
Look, both of those nights I was on the other corner across the street from Starbucks with your dad.
You were to O'Rourke's with my dad?
Yeah, we were shooting pool, and one thing led to another, and you know, and we moved to a 4 o'clock bar. And then that closed, and we went to Cicero. As you do. Next thing you know, it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and I took your dad home, and, well, you could say I had a bit of a headache. It was a bit of a migraine.
This is weird, Father, but I feel like I need to absolve you of your sins.
Well, I appreciate that, Jordan.
I don't know how to do it. I mean...
Well, I think let's just... take a moment and absolve each other?
Okay.
We'll get you off your knees, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Because that was hurting.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was that for you?
That was fun.
What was really fun about it for you?
Just diving in was the fun part. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the apprehension that's the icky part.
The apprehension, the building up to it?
Yeah.
Because when was the last time you had improvised?
Well, actually, it was just a couple weeks ago in Ireland with... it was funny because I went to this comedy festival in Kilkenny.
Was this with the Michael McCarthy?
With McCarthy. McCarthy and Joel Murray and Katie Rich and Bernadette, my wife, who's improviser, and me. Mm-hmm. And we'd gone to see these Irish and English guys do all these high-energy, whose-line-y sort of
kind
games.
Kind of games.
Yeah. And I was a little intimidated because they were pretty good. But it did get old when it game, you know, it's just got a bit old. So Joel, in his wisdom, thought, what would Dell want us to do? And so we did an Armando and killed.
And Armando summons a monologue and then you do scenes based on
that. It was a split up Armando. We had an 80-minute set. So we did, each of us... did a monologue after about 10 minutes. And then we improvised, until we sort of ran out of gas with each monologue, and then somebody else started a new monologue.
And you had a blast doing that.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Would you have done anything, when you're done with improv, when you finish doing improv like you did in Ireland, do you go back and say, okay, I wish I would have done something different, or do you just let it be?
I guess I let it be at this point because certainly not much you can do about it.
Mm-hmm. So there's no like, okay, I would have done...
Or like note sessions?
Yeah, note
something?
Sessions.
Yeah.
Like if we had a note session, what would you...
I don't know. I wouldn't have kept you on your knees that long. That was making me feel bad.
Really?
Well, I just know how much pain I would be in.
Okay. Well, I felt bad because at the beginning of the scene, I wasn't looking at you because I was like, I'm in a confessional, or maybe I was intimidated a little, and I'm like, then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, maybe I should look at George, you know?
There'd be the thing in between it.
Right. That's what I was.
We'd be seeing shadows.
Yeah. And then the other thing I thought was, you know, the kind of taking from the conversation before we did the thing was to bring some of that your. Political,
yeah,
what you felt political, but it almost felt too forced. I wish I would have
called you on it, though. That's like,
that was great.
Yeah,
but I wish I would have been a little more subtle with that because I hate hitting things over the head.
Yeah.
You know, anything you would have done differently besides? You had an instinct. You said, "Well, maybe you could be the priest. Me be the priest."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but I'm happy either way.
Okay, I think
I wanted to be a priest.
You wanted to be a priest. Well, I was kind of scared to be the priest.
I wanted to be a priest because I just thought it'd be like easy and
right.
Yeah, but you know, it'd be fun. It wouldn't be fun, but I mean, it was. I don't know. I think a lot of Catholic boys, you know, have that feeling, and then sometime in the middle of seventh grade, I had my first erotic dream about Susie Whalen, and then it was over. The whole priesthood thing.
All right, can I ask about Catholicism for a second?
Sure.
How does Catholicism play into your comedy? Because I think like people that are really Catholic, there's it is in there. Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, I have tremendous anger and bitterness. Towards the church and the hierarchy and all that. Now, what Jesus said was kind of awesome, you know? Mm-hmm. But just everything else has been such rubbish, all the man-made stuff. And, you know, these popes, you know, like, really just get on my nerves. Like, Polish poet. Which one was he? John Paul II or something?
Which one was he?
I forget.
John Paul II.
Okay. John Paul II. The one, yeah. Santo Subito, like instant sainthood. No, 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 no. He had a lot of explaining to do about the abuse scandal.
Is that what you're angry about? No. How they handle the abuse scandal?
No, but more about, yeah, that and about women. You know, yeah, like he doubled down on women in the liturgy and the wrong way. He mm-hmm. doubled down. It's just idiotic.
What do you think about priests marrying?
I think they totally should be married. I mm-hmm. mean, that's...
What about women having a bigger role in the church?
Why not? Mm-hmm.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. Some of the best experiences I had in the Catholic Church were with women, yeah. You know? That sounds weird, doesn't it? George... It's a generational thing. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I taught, like, Sunday school, and it was the nun who ran it was very liberal.
Yeah.
And then I did, like, a
nuns
high school.
Nuns are cool. Nuns. Now, nuns are cool.
Yeah. But, you know, and then I did a high school program where I was, like, a counselor, and they were very liberal. The problem I had were the priests.
Yeah.
You know, holding on to that hierarchy stuff.
Yeah. Baloney.
Yep. All right. Let's take some questions not pertaining to the cat. Well, I guess we could take any question for George about, yes, right here, Jerry?
Yeah, George, Cheers was filmed live from an audience. Hmm. How was that done? Did you guys repeat scenes if somebody flubbed, or were there pauses between scenes, or did you just play it straight through?
All of the above. If we didn't fuck anything up, we would just play it straight through. And, magazines were, 35 millimeter film, so it was an 11 minute reel. So we'd have to cut after 11 minutes, you know, reload. But oftentimes the scenes were shorter, so we'd cut anyway. And if somebody, you know, screwed up, we'd just back it up and start again.
I want. Where did you get your training as an actor? Because I've seen you in things other than right. comedy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just all Josephine and Second City, really.
Did you study with Dennis Zajac, too, here at Picture
Yard? You know, I did just a wee little bit.
Okay.
I did, yeah. But it's all just, it's all about, you know, listening and, you know, the fundamentals that you know, you focus, listening.
I interviewed George, I interviewed John Ratzenberg,
oh.
And he said he improvised on Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine if he improvised, it was on a very limited basis because...
Yeah, he did. He was about the only one who would improvise, and it was very little, I'd say less than 0.5% of, you know, everything he said. Was.
Did you ever improvise, change a line here and there?
Not really. I mean, you know, I might... put a little handle on it or, you know, ask the writers for some help with a, you know, a phrase or something.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't improvise much at all. You know what, we would improvise in rehearsals a bit and, you know, once in a while, the director, Jim Burrows, would, he'd say, yeah, let's try that in the run-through, you know, and so we would, and then if it worked or something, you might see it. If they liked it, you'd see it in the next day's pages.
Mm-hmm.
And if
pages
it
meaning?
Rewrites.
Okay.
Because they rewrote it every night. We would rehearse it and run it for the writers, and then they would rewrite based on what they saw every night. So if it didn't make it into the next day's pages, you let it go because it was they didn't like it.
Great. Take another question right here, Tom.
My question for you is, once Cheers ran its course, what's life like for you at that point? What do you think? Do you try to top it, or what goes on?
Oh,
what goes on life for
you? Yeah, well, it's trying to, you know, there's just no topping that, really. You know, you just try to one foot in front of the other like everybody else. Now you've got a huge leg up, but, you know, plugging away.
Great. Let's take another question. Right here.
who are your comic influences when you're growing up, and then people that kind of along your generation that you admire?
Well, certainly the Honeymooners, you know, Jackie Gleason, Art Carney, growing up, Sid Caesar, I guess, you know, those guys, on TV. And then, you know, when I saw John Belushi, you know, that was just.
Do you remember the first time you saw him?
Yeah. I'll bet everybody who's ever saw him remembers the first time they saw him.
Can you tell us?
Well, no, I probably can't get much more specific other than to say.
Did you see him at Second City?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, other than to say I was just blown away, pure and simple, just like just the funniest thing ever. You know, like the second he came on stage, I mean, you were laughing before, you know, while he was thinking, you were laughing.
Let's take another question. Can't see. Yeah, right here.
Are there any sitcoms you watch now, and how would you compare then and now as far as television?
You know, just I don't mean this to sound snotty, but I don't watch too many. I watched a bit of 30 Rock, and I see Veep now and then. So okay, those are both single camera, which is you know, it's entirely different way of working, but they're you know, well written and funny. Ours is, you know, different. You know, ours is you know, it's more proscenium. You know, four cameras. So there's a shot more like a feature, obviously. You know, I'm talking about.
Great. Another question? Right, back here.
I was curious, you mentioned just for a second about writing. Did you have an interest, like, in possibly delving into that a lot more in your life, like, back then? Or did you do it on the side out of pleasure, or was it?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I got spoiled so thoroughly by Cheers that I didn't hone that. I mean, we were writing and trying to develop stuff while we were at Second City, me, Jim Kazurinsky, Bruce Jarko, Danny Breen. You know, we would, you know, we'd try to write the odd movie or the odd sitcom or things like that. And, but no, so I think, you know, a lot of the writers, you know, have that voice, that comic voice, and a lot of them, you know, it's more out of necessity. Christ, I gotta, you know, start generating stuff for myself, and you know, that's how, you know, a lot of the UK performers, sitcom performers, you know, they write all their own shit for the most part, and you know, since then, of course, you know, we've seen Tina and Amy do it, and other, you know, people writing, you know, for themselves. But I got spoiled and lazy by, I mean, these guys were studs, crazy writers.
We got to wrap this up, George. But before we go, what advice would you give somebody starting out in comedy or improv today?
I go back to Josephine Forsberg and the truest note I ever got, have fun. Not only on stage, have fun backstage. Have fun preparing for auditions. Have fun in auditions. Have fun getting together with all your friends and like-minded fellow players. And just have fun the whole damn time, because if you're not having fun, the hell with it.
George Wendt, thank you so much.
And there you have it. It's another episode of Improv Nerd. It is in the can. And I want to thank our special guest today, George Wendt. I really appreciate him coming in and doing the show. And I also appreciate his honesty about his feelings on improvisation. I thought that was just, it was one of my favorite parts of the show. Also want to thank the good people here at Stage 773 here in Chicago. They're our home base. They're the people that treat us so well and treat us like rock stars. Want to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes it sound so slick and so professional. Well, you wouldn't be hearing my voice if it wasn't for Dan. Also, if you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning classes and my August 10th workshop, and also the improv blog, go to it. Every week we'll send you out a new improv blog that will make you a better improviser. Check that out. We also have improv nerd t-shirts and books and stuff like that at jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com. We're also part of a podcast collective, and it's called Feral Audio. So check out all the wonderful podcasts that they have on Feral Audio. That's feralaudio.com. If you want to follow us, you can do it on Twitter at improv_nerd. You can also follow us on our Facebook page. Please, please like us, because it really helps with my low self-esteem, and that's just Improv Nerd. We also have a YouTube channel. We're taking over the world, if you haven't realized it. I want to thank my sponsors, at Hotel Lincoln and the Artist Low Comedy Class. And more importantly, I want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello. I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
I help people.
She's a cat. We fight a penguin.